I'd like to go ahead and call the meeting to order. Senate Finance Committee, March 5th, 2024, 9 a.m. With me today is Chairman Olson, Senator Bishop, Senator Merrick, Senator Keel, Senator Wilson, myself, Stedman. Senator Keel will be on the way. He's slightly detained, but he'll be here. This morning, the committee will receive reports from several school districts across the state dealing with their budgets and the enrollment trends and the fund balances, basically two main directions. We'll look at the fund balances and we'll look at coming year's expenditures and how ends are going to meet. We're going to have a very tight schedule. Some of these presentations are longer and frankly off the mark. We're here to talk about the funding, mainly. This is the Finance Committee, the Education Committee. So please consolidate your comments to that. Each group will have 15 minutes, including questions, and we need to stay on time. So if you want your message to be received by the committeemen, make it on point. So we can, you know, get through everybody's presentation, because this is critical in the discussion, not only this year, but in the following years of the funding needed for K-12. So the order of the school districts after we get rolling, we'll start with Anchorage, which is our largest school district. We'll go to Mat-Su, which has an increasing enrollment. And for those watching at home, we have some disparities within our school districts where most of the school districts are in declining enrollment, some are in advancing enrollment, and a small handful are relatively flat. Cuspuck is a rural attendance area school. Kodiak will be next, Northwest Arctic, and then finally Ketchikan. But for the introduction, and the lead-off and the definition of some of the terms we're going to be using, we'll start with Dr. Lisa Parity, if she can come forward, along with Nils Andreessen, if he can come forward, and take us through your brief presentation, and we will be done with your portion at 9:15.
Mr. Chairman, co-chairs, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Dr. Lisa Skiles Parity. I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators. We represent all superintendents, elementary and secondary principals, school business officials, and education leaders across Alaska. I briefly want to just introduce kind of the framework for today. And I think you've each been in receipt of our joint position statements. And in that, every year, we do what are called the pencil charts. Some of you, I think, are familiar with them. I appreciate your legislative finance staff. They give us the data, and then we plug it into the charts. And I just want to note that since 2017, we've only had a $30 increase to the BSA. And when adjusted for inflation, the FY24 BSA of 5960 has a FY12 value of 4,682, which is demonstrated by the pencil chart. And I think I'd just note that that's a sincerely huge loss of buying power for our school districts. As well, the other chart shows that if the BSA had even been adjusted for inflation, since 2017, the BSA would have a value of 7,373. So I only call your attention to these charts. I know you've seen them. I know you're aware of them. But it's with these charts or these figures that the six school districts before you are kind of going to be sharing their framework of operation. In addition to that is the fund balance. Fund balance has caused great confusion the last couple years, and so we want to clarify each of the district's fund balance situations and answer questions so that hopefully we leave here with more clarity around fund balance. My partner, or our partner, AML and Nils Andreasen, and our school business officials worked on a white paper that we sent to each of you prior to session. I believe it's also in your packet. And with the fund balance explainer, we've created a couple of slides. So we're going to have Nils walk through those, and appreciate that we've been given this opportunity to share with you some of the realities that school districts are working with. So Nils.
Great, thank you. For the record, Nils Andreasen, I'm the executive director of the Alaska Municipal League. Appreciate the invitation to present to the committee this morning and review just a few high-level notes for the audience at home and present a fund balance overview that might be helpful. Again, the purpose of a fund balance, multiple purposes, one, to smooth out cash flow management, to ensure that cash flow is appropriate for governmental entities, including school districts. Fund balance is to help with to offset revenue shortfalls and with unexpected expenditures, to help maintain services, to help school districts and governmental entities improve long-term planning, and to enhance credit ratings, especially for those school districts and local governments who are bonding for some of their facilities. There's multiple types of fund balance, and you'll have received reports from the Department of Education, I believe, that highlight a number of these for the districts around the state. These types include non-spendable, restricted, committed, and assigned. All of those are basically otherwise called for. So they have a role and responsibility within each district. Unassigned fund balance is probably what we're talking about more often. It can be thought of a little bit in terms of as unrestricted, but it also includes other types of funding that will be important to understand. When it comes to unassigned fund balance, some of the pieces that I think are important are, one, what you might see in an unassigned fund balance is just the result of an appropriation timeline when a school district or a government receives funding. Sometimes they'll be present in an unassigned fund balance before they've been otherwise allocated. Unassigned fund balance might also be affected by payroll, by teacher salaries, planned purchases, and student activities, all of which will be coming as expenditures in the coming months but aren't currently assigned. It's important to note, and I presented this to another Senate committee, but the Government Finance Officers Association does have fund balance guidelines. These are adopted and formal on their website. GFOA recommends at a minimum that general purpose governments, and I would include within that school districts, regardless of size, should maintain unrestricted or unassigned budgetary fund balance in their general fund of no less than 2 months of regular general fund operating revenues or regular general fund operating expenditures. And that's a bar that we can look to for each of our school districts. But when we're looking at the numbers that have been presented to you based on December financials reported in February, what we see is that 39% of available fund balance is considered unassigned. Everything else is more or less called for, is restricted. And that 39% then must cover cash flow, future bills, payroll, and any emergency needs for the rest of the school year. It's worth noting that districts with higher unassigned fund balances may experience that timing issue that we discussed in previous slides. When it comes to a fund balance relative to expenses, based on FY24 budgets that were submitted back in July by districts to the Department of Education, the statewide total unassigned fund balance is equivalent to just 8% of school district total expenses. There are 22 districts with $0 as an unassigned fund balance, and only 5 districts fall above the GFOA guidelines of 2 months. So it's easy to see $183 million as an unassigned fund balance and imagine that that's available to address budget shortfalls for everybody, but that's clearly not the case. When we're looking at those FY24 budgets that were submitted back in July, and it's worth, again, noting that budgets get updated throughout the school year as numbers and updates come in, and they're adjusted based on amendments. So this is back in July. Only 16 of 53 school districts had balanced budgets. If you used the unassigned fund balance available to each, it only pulls 15 of the remainder out of deficits. Finally, the use of fund balance for deficits would, if you think of them as totals, 183 million available, $73 million budget deficit. If you actually were able to use that total to address current budget deficits, you would leave just 9 school days of expenses available to districts. And again, 22 of those districts don't actually have fund balance to assign to address their budget deficit. So with that, I'll leave you with
stop
the sources
there.
Of those data.
Let's back up a slide, please. So maybe I'm under a misconception. I'm under the conception that you can't move fund balances from one school district to another one. So can you explain to the committee how that's done?
Right, to the chair, can't. That's correct. I think, and that's what I was trying to say maybe in not so well. It appears like there's $183 million available for everybody. That's not really true. There's only some of that available to some districts. And then mostly not to others. So you couldn't actually use that total unassigned fund balance to address everybody's budget deficits.
Okay. And we've got a breakdown here on the previous slide of the fund balances on what is the date of these fund balances?
The chair. These are for FY24 budgets. These are the budgets that were submitted and the deficits or surpluses that were included by each district. So it's just a snapshot in time based on July 15 budgets that were submitted. Some of these districts may have already pulled fund balance forward, which is why you might see zero. Others will use their fund balance over the course of that school year to address actuals that they experience along the way.
Okay, so just for clarity, so are these the balances in those accounts on July 1 or and at what date? 2023, July 1 or?
So the chair, these
do we know?
Don't represent fund balance amounts as of July 1. These are the budget numbers that were submitted to DED.
Okay. We just want to be clear because it's just a snapshot in time of when the fund balance is actually there. Some numbers, some of the fund balances is constrained and some aren't.
Mr. Chairman, the 6 districts will talk about theirs in depth, right. But this is kind of a big picture for the committee.
Just want to be clear to the public that you can't move money from one school district to another. And some of them are in declining enrollment, some of them are in advancing enrollment. And all the needs are different. Senator Bishop.
I'd just like to make a comment on this slide. I'm glad you went back to it, Mr. Chairman. I just see a lot of red is what I look at when I see this slide. And I see the other, you could say it's balanced with a zero. I guess that's what you're assuming to get to zero, that you're calling it balanced. But if it was today, I would like to see what this slide would look like. Thank you.
I think we're going to talk about that with the school districts.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll then go on and we'll ask anchors to come up. We have Andy Ratcliffe, the Chief Financial Officer of Anchorage. They are our largest school district with roughly 40,000+ kids. So I know you've got a huge presentation, which we're not going to go through because we don't have time for all these slides. So you're going to have to boil it down and talk about the money.
I'm going to pull up my documents. Take forgetting.
We'll have a brief evidence. Come back on the record. If you can introduce yourself for the record and who you represent and give us an overview of the Anchorage School District, please.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Andy Ratliff. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of the Anchorage School District. And I wanted to go through some financial history that we've had and what our outlook is for the future years and what our fund balances are. So this slide was, or this is a spreadsheet that we were asked to put together that shows our historic enrollment, our budget history, and what our current budget is. Going to our historic enrollment, the percent comparison from 2000 to 2023, you'll see a decline in our overall enrollment. We're one of those school districts that are experiencing declines. There is an increase in the adjusted average daily membership, primarily due to changes in statute for things like intensive needs students where they're added more multipliers on there. So with those changes in statute, this isn't really a good representation of how it's changed, but in my presentation, I do have some slides that are more comparative with like a 5 and 10 year look back, which will kind of show a little bit more in depth of how those changes. The budget history, that does include our PERS and TERS on behalf payments as we are required to report those. And then at the bottom on that budget history, you can see our end of year fund balance. Been hovering around 120, 130 million until about 2023 when we saw a pretty big uptick in what our funding was just through saving state one-time money and then a bunch of vacancies, which I'll get into that as well. The last thing, I think I'm cut off on that additional allowable contribution slide, but that shows about 225 million of maximum local contributions that the city can pitch in for our operating fund. The actual amount was 221 million and change. And the difference is really because of the timing on the state one-time funds that came in 24. We were unable to apply for the local match because we had already submitted our tax requests.
So on that, can you define the additional allowable and the maximum allowable amount, the 225 million? Because it'll be on all these other slides, school districts will be very, very similar to this. So could you please explain to the committee what that number is?
Yes, sir. So the maximum allowable is both the required local contribution, which is based on our property taxes or full value in the district, and then the additional allowable amount is calculated as 23% of basic need, which is the base student allocation times your adjusted average daily membership. So they calculate that out, they take 23% of that, and then anything else applied on the basis of adjusted ADM, and that would be the quality schools grant and then one-time money outside of the foundation formula that applied districts on that metric.
So is this amount up to the allowable max from state statutes or is it at the local level?
So the maximum under state statute is the 225 million. There is a line cut off on this that should say 221 million, which is how much we actually received for the current fiscal year.
I think it's probably the next page, but it's on our handouts.
Yeah, it's okay. It's on here. And really, you know, like I said, that was because of the timing where we had submitted our tax request already, and then we got the state funding, which increased the allowable maximum.
Next slide.
I need to get into. Okay, so I really wanted to get into at least start off with, here's how we currently spend our money in just broad categories of where that money goes. The biggest category, obviously, is our direct instruction, and that's special ed teachers, general ed teachers sitting directly in front of students, the paraprofessionals, and all the supplies, materials, software, and equipment that goes along with instructing kids directly in their settings. Student supports, that's our next biggest line item, which is nurses, counselors, security, librarians, principals, clerical staff, all the professional development, interventions, things like that. And then operations and maintenance, just to keep our lights on and our buildings maintained, is about $84 million. And then administration is about $42 million, which includes superintendent, school board, all the areas under me, finance, purchasing, budget, HR, IT. I would like to note that, you know, this is one of the things that we all constantly hear about is you guys should be cutting administration. For the departments under my purview, I've cut half the CFO staff, a third of the budget staff, 25% of my accounting staff, and like 17% of my purchasing staff over the last 10 or 12 years. So we are making those adjustments as we can find efficiencies. However, I mean, we're getting to a mission critical thing where we can't take more money out of administration, at least in the areas that I oversee. Going forward for FY25 budget, we did submit that to the our assembly yesterday for approval, even before we can wrap up how much money we think we're going to get from the state. And that included a projected $100 base student allocation increase, or that an equivalent of that. And our school board added those funds back to be able to preserve or not have to increase our class sizes. They retained our Ignite program for our gifted students. They retained these what we call holdback teachers that address enrollment bubbles in classes or scheduling conflicts in secondary. And then they kept our immersion program full, and they kept our staff in there. And the other way we balanced our budget, and we'll get to this, is we used $71 million of our fund balance. And kind of going back to the slide that Mr. Andreessen presented, the $45 million you saw on there is a minus for Anchorage. That's the amount of fund balance we actually plan to use for the year. Not how much we have or how much we're going to have. It's just how much we intended to use to balance our budget. So with our FY25 budget currently, we're relying on some money that does not yet exist in the terms of that $100 BSA. We're burning down our fund balance to nearly about 1% or about $6 million of actual spendable money. And then we're taking on a whole lot more risk when we talk about how much money we generate in our fund balance from vacancies and employee turnover, which I'll show you some charts on that, too, to give you a better mind's eye of how that's affected and how it relates to recruitment and retention.
So talk a little bit about how you do your budget in unfilled positions.
Sure. So through the chair, thank you for that. We do make an estimate of how many positions we are going to go unfilled. For the current year, we estimated about $20 million or $28 million of unspent salary and benefit money. Our actual experience is going to be closer to 41. So that is going to increase the amount of fund balance we have available to spend next year. But we do try to take into a percentage of how many position vacancies we're going to have. And it's currently about 400 to 450 vacancies we've had perpetually for the last couple of years. That's about 8% of our workforce.
So that, if I heard you correctly, that's going to swing in around $20 million to the positive on your cash flow at the end of the year?
Through the chair, yeah, about $13 million.
$13 million. Yeah. Senator Wilson.
Thank you. Can you explain one more time about how you're cover the deficit in terms of your fund balance? You said so this year is $44 million, but you said in your budgeting process you have an estimated on projected revenue, or could you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, through the chair, the way we did that was, in the $45 million was for this current year's budget, and then that actually changed once we got the new state funding, the one-time money. That was just our initial cut. The $71 million that we're planning for is for next year, so we plan to use all of that. And that, again, takes us down to about 1% fund balance or spendable fund balance, 1% of expenditures. And then we're increasing our risk. We're having like two-week hiring delays. We are making significant reductions in the amount of supplies and services we have. We're not going to refresh some curriculum. At this point, students still think George Bush is president in some of these. So
that's a quick follow-up then. And you said that equivalent would be how much to the BSA?
We added an estimate of about $100 in the BSA just to retain those mission critical things, not have to displace staff.
And that's $100 on top of this current year's appropriation, or $100 on base student?
Through the chair, that's $100 on top of the $59.60 that's currently in statute.
Okay, thank you.
And we got about five. We're going to probably let you fudge a little bit because you're setting the stage for the other ones, but not a lot. So pick your missed slides.
All right, I'll go quickly. You guys have seen this one a lot. This just shows the base student allocation over time. And then the other bars are really indicative of how we balance the budget. So you see that big yellow bar in FY25. That's our equivalent of fund balance, or our BSA equivalent of how much we're using in fund balance. It's been balanced through ESSER money, state one-times and funds, budget cuts, and those fund balance over the years. That the line at the top is what the BSA would have been had it been inflation-proofed. But the gaps really are going to be what was actually ended up being cut.
Yeah, just for the other school districts, I don't think we're really concerned about the inflation-adjusted $1,400 and some odd. We're trying to figure out how much you actually need to run your school system, regardless of.
Yeah, thank you for that. I think we are going to need that eventually. Maybe not for Anchorage next year, because we do have a significant amount of fund balance. But that bill is going to come due by FY26 for us if we spend down all of our current savings.
Okay. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. He just answered my question, because I was just boiling it right down to the, I see your fund balance, I see your withdrawal, and how long cadets you run, and you just said it, by 26, you've got a zero fund balance. Your status quo funding.
Yeah, through the chair, it would be about $6 million unassigned. We'd still have our other categories that were required reserve, which I'll show you also.
Thank you.
That's actually the next slide. So here's what we're projecting for our FY24 general fund, about $174 million. Here's how that breaks down. We have our prepaid items and inventory that's required. It's non-spendable money. Our federal impact aid, which is kind of a taxes or a payment in lieu of taxes. We reserve that for the following year, about $13 million. Encumbrances, these are ongoing projects for IT maintenance projects. But a lot of this money is actually for our charter schools. So we allow them to encumber their unspent money and carry it forward. And they're going to be spending a lot of their fund balance as well for the following year. Self-insurance, we are self-insured for workers' comp and risk management claims, so that's our run-out for that. And then our unreserved, that's the portion that I think gets reported differently, and these classifications are different than what Mr. Andreessen shared, because his are based on the GASB 54 definitions that we're required to report on, and this is what's required still in statute. So there's a disparity in the state's reporting and what our actual reporting requirements are. But going that unreserved fund balance of $104 million or so, about $71 million, that's what we're going to allocate to next year's deficit. If we were to get additional funding from the state, we would reduce our reliance on fund balance, because really this isn't best practice for us to be burning our fund balance down to near zero. That would give us about $6 million in unassigned money to use for emergencies, that whether that be when we had the earthquake, when Russian Jack Elementary burned down, or if we just have a drop in enrollment that we have to cover our losses because we've already have our people on staff. So ideally, we wouldn't be burning our fund balance down to that level, but we need to maintain some semblance of quality education in our schools. So how we built up that fund balance is, here's our attrition history. The red line is a percentage of our total budget, and the blue bars are our adopted salary and benefits. And then the chart at the bottom shows how much has actually been realized over the fall over the years. It's kind of been a steady increase, and this speaks to the amount of recruitment and retention issues we've had. Like I said, for FY24, we projected $28 million. We're going to experience about $41 million. For next year, we budgeted about $41 million. So if there's some turnaround in the economy and more people take on government jobs, we could potentially be in the hole in this. So we are taking a whole lot more risk in this budget by using our fund balance and increasing our attrition estimates.
Okay, but we're getting close on the time. So what you've told us is that you need $110 this year over the base BSA to make your school system work. But is that correct?
Ideally, we would have more, because we are making cuts through all our other areas. We are cutting our support in special education, our flexibility there. We're cutting administration. We're cutting curriculum. We're cutting Chromebook refreshments and other technology items we need for security. And ideally, we wouldn't be burning down our $71 million in fund balance. We could use that to maintain, help maintain our facilities, which we have about $1 billion backlog at this point on our deferred maintenance.
Yeah, I need you to talk a little bit about transportation costs. And then what are you doing with your hard assets to so you don't run financially off the cliff?
Sure. Great questions. Through the chair on that, here's a chart that shows our change. This also shows our change in transportation and all of our operating funding for since from 17 to 25. As you can see, back in 2017, transportation was a fully self-funded program from the state. So the state paid 100% of our cost of transportation. Now the state pays a little under $20 million, and local taxpayers are kicking in about $9 million. So we're increasing the burden on local taxpayers to pay for what's something that used to be 100% funded by the state. So that's how we're covering transportation. You know, I do understand that we have lost enrollment, and we do need to right-size our district on school consolidations. We are going through that process again. We'll probably kick that off here in several weeks, but we need to get better in community engagement. That was the feedback we got the last time we tried that, was the community was very unhappy with the way we went about that. Although we had a lot of town halls and a lot of engagement, there wasn't a lot of community involvement on the selection of which schools to close. But understand, you know, we're going to have some excess capacity in our buildings, and that's going to need to be addressed.
Okay. We have some questions before we go to the next presenter on Anchorage. So just to follow up on that, there's a 110 minimum needed, but you're saying if you don't get to 1400 in a couple of years, there's going to be some catastrophic failure of your school system?
Through the chair, that's correct. I mean, if we were to have flat revenues, I mean, we could make it through next year. A lot of districts aren't and have the luxury of the position that we do to be able to use that much fund balance. But if that's all gone in 26 and we don't have anything in the base student allocation to cover it, our deficit's going to be, you know, again, $100 million. And that's, you know, that's thousands of people that we're going to have to cut. It'll be very significant to have to make that kind of adjustment in our school systems. Really wouldn't look the same.
If you could get back to the committee on a financial projection for your school system, it would be helpful.
Absolutely.
Maybe the next 3 years, project it out for the next 3 years. Use the, I guess, your best guess at your enrollment numbers. You'll have to project that. And so we can take a look at that, and then please address what the district may be considering to, you know, make sure the books are balanced, basically, going forward. We have other questions for Anchorage, and there might be questions later on with committee members and stuff, because I know these presentations are very short today.
Just a quick question, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Senator Wilson.
I know that your average daily enrollment seems to be a huge spike in correspondence school. Has there been any survey to see why your correspondence is going up or why people are leaving your brick and mortar schools to go to correspondence?
Through the chair, thank you for that. I don't know that we've done surveys to why, but here is a chart that shows our FY15, FY20, and 25 enrollment and our adjusted ADM. And you can, I mean, we had 140% increase in the last 10 years in our correspondence. And a lot of that was in due to the pandemic, where more people sought out a different method of education as they were staying home anyway. And a lot of people, and we returned in person, and a lot of people just liked that model better, as far as I understand. But there, we don't have any surveys to really back that data up. We do have this chart that shows, you know, our enrollment's gone down by 10% over the last 10 years, and we do need to address that. Our adjusted ADM, this was the one I wanted to talk about from that spreadsheet, has only gone down by about 3%. That's predominantly due to about 38% increase in our intensive needs students. So while we do get an adjustment in the ADM for those intensive needs students, they do come with a significant cost to educate those. So it doesn't tell the whole story to say your adjusted ADM is not decreasing as fast because we have to provide significantly more services.
And we'll have a brief at ease while we gear up. We have a quick question. Just Senator Mary.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Ratliff. I would like to see where we are for class sizes in the Anchorage School District and what would happen should the cuts that you referred to happen, like how many students would increase, especially in our elementary schools.
And if you can integrate that into your response back with your three-year projection, it'd be nice.
Sure. Through the chair, thank you for that. But here's the snapshot of where we're at now. In terms of a dollar value, if we were to increase a PTR across the board, it equals about $7 to $8 million. The higher those PTRs get, there's kind of a diminishing returns on how many actual staff you can reduce in the cost savings. But this is just a 10-year change in our PTR, so hopefully that helps answer some of the questions.
Okay, we'll have a brief Eddie's while we set up Matsu. We're Eddie's. Come back on the record, please. Next up, we have Matt Sousa sitting at Borough School District, Mr. Trainee, the superintendent, and Katie Gardner, Deputy Superintendent of Operations. And just for those watching at home, Matt Sousa is our growth area of the state in schools, went from about 13,000 students at the turn of the century, now to roughly around 20. So we have I don't want to say an anomaly, but a standout as far as the rate of growth and the number of students that Matsu has to deal with. And they're going to consolidate their presentation here. And if you can introduce yourself for the record and then take us through a couple of slides, please.
All right, through the chair, I'm Dr. Randy Trainee, the superintendent of the Matsu Borough School District. And I'm joined by my deputy superintendent.
For the record, Katie Gardner, Deputy Superintendent for Business and Operations for the Matsu School District.
And in the room as well, I'm joined by my board president, Underwood, and the vice chair, McCullum. So thank you for coming. I'll keep my comments very short, and we have cut out the first half of the presentation and focus primarily on the financial portion. I do hope you can look through the first part of the presentation and see the academic growth that we've been making at Matsu. I think it's important for people to understand that what we're paying for actually is resulting in academic achievement. We are a growing district, and that presents unique challenges. One simple way that we've been managed to manage the flat funding differently than other districts is as we've had more kids come in, we've differentially added staff to support them. So in other words, we've got more revenue, but we haven't added more expenses, and there's consequences to that. I'll give you a super high level. If the BSA is zero this year, we're going to cut $30 million or use fund balance. If the BSA is $340 million, we're going to need to cut $18 million and or use fund balance. If it's $680 million, we only cut $6 million. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Deputy Superintendent Gardner, and she can talk more in depth about how our enrollment has changed, what our fund balance currently looks like, and any other questions that you might have, we're happy to take them.
Good evening. For the record, again, Katie Gardner, Deputy Superintendent for Business and Operations. Thank you for the opportunity to share some of Matsu's story in regard to our financial outlook and recent history. We are a growing district, and while our growth has steadied, as you can see, it's been pretty dramatic since 2000, where we have grown about 54%. What we saw was a dip in 2021, like many districts around the state, but we have rebounded and continue to see growth year over year. Like many of my colleagues, we have also relied on inconsistent sources of revenue to make sure that we can provide all of the services that we need to our students. So while we have had pretty flat funding in regard to the state, primarily in how the formula is adjusted for the growth in our area, which we'll talk about in a minute, we have relied on one-time funds from the state, as well as COVID relief funds and our fund balance to make sure that we're able to sustain operations. And part of the projected deficit that we are looking at for fiscal year 2025 is a result of those funding sources no longer being available, fully expended. We will be talking with our board about the use of fund balance to help with fiscal year 2025 if revenues are not provided at the state or local level. However, we still anticipate under all of the scenarios that even with our growth, we'll have to make reductions to balance the budget for fiscal year 25. While Matsu student enrollment is growing, the growth in our local community is also been growing at a very fast rate. And while the assessed values for our local area go up, it means that what we receive in funding from the state actually diminishes. So while the assessed values are increasing rapidly, especially most recently last year and this year as a result of record high inflation, what we're seeing is that the minimum required local, which comes out of the state entitlement, means in many cases either completely flat or slight reductions in our overall revenue from the state of Alaska when you take all of that into consideration. And this is what that has been over the last 10 years when compared to the base student allocation. In addition, it has also required our local community to provide a greater portion of funding. You can see that from 2019 to 2024, the percentages have changed a little bit, so that the Matsu Borough is providing a greater percentage of our overall revenue, even as a growing district. We also wanted to make sure that we provided some information on how we're allocating the resources that we do have access to. And so you can see from 2019 to 2024, we are focusing our decisions to spend in the educational areas, which are represented by the blue on the graph, and looking to try to keep those other administrative areas either flat or a slight reduction to make sure that we're focusing dollars on the classroom to maintain class size as much as possible. That consistently has been a priority as we've surveyed our community and our families, that class size is particularly important and they would like to see that maintained. What you won't see here, and is also a big part of Matsu's story, is that we have used ESSER funds to support maintaining class size. So most of the expenditure for our COVID relief funds have been in these regular education and special education areas. And while this is a look at just the general operating fund, that is where we focused those resources. And that is part of the revenue that we'll have to figure out how to make up, depending on what decisions are made for fiscal year 2025. In addition, we have a fund balance that is available. One other unique component to our look at fund balance is our school board has established a minimum fund balance and has asked that we maintain at least a 5% fund balance so that those resources are available for unforeseen circumstances. Like Anchorage School District, we have had situations that have been unexpected. We had to build a new Houston High School after the earthquake. And so these funds have been helpful in allowing us to do this. And so at fiscal year end 2023, we had about $20 million in fund balance. What you can see is that there is about $3 million of that that we reserve for charter schools. Those are funds that were allocated to charter schools. Charter schools maintain those fund balances. So those aren't resources that the district would have to allocate to support our neighborhood schools. Those are resources that charter schools are able to maintain for their own purposes, in the same way that we would as a district. So they're balancing limited resources and helping to soften revenue adjustments over time, whether it's because of enrollment or unforeseen circumstances that they're facing. So the red line is that minimum that was established 2 years ago by the school board. The blue is the district unassigned, and then the green on this graph are the charter balances.
We have a question from Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate your presentation. Ms. Gardner, can you just help with the drop from 20 to 21? Was that related to the spend down of federal funding, or was federal funding flowing in? What accounts for that $12 million reduction?
Thank you for the question through the chair to Senator Keel. That adjustment is really something that happened and was adjusted over time. So after the earthquake, the school district had combined Houston Middle School and Houston High School into one facility because Houston, the Houston school was torn down and condemned. So we had students that were operating in relocatables for the most part. And in support of the Mat-Su Borough, in order to start the building project and ensure that we could have a replacement building for those students who were affected by the earthquake, the district contributed a significant amount of fund balance to make sure that that building project could begin. In the end, there were funds that were identified for that, and those what we had provided for Houston Middle School was then used to support the building of Mat-Su Central School, which is currently underway right now.
Okay. So can you help me with the allowable, maximum allowable of balance of $91 million in your submitted document to the contribution of $71 million? There's $20 million spread there.
Certainly to the chair.
For those watching, it's the lower line, left-hand side of 24, and then there's the 71 on the following page. It's unfortunate that they're not on one page, but they're not. So help me understand what those numbers are and why I should be interested in them.
Thank you for the question, Senator Stedman. The maximum allowable is the maximum amount that the Mat-Su Borough contribute to education. And the $71 million for fiscal year 2024 is the amount that the Mat-Su Borough is contributing to the Mat-Su School District. So the difference there is $20 million that under state law could be provided to the school district, though in the Mat-Su there is another ordinance that outlines funding, as well as over time there has been a tax cap that the assembly has approved, which would have limited the ability to support Mat-Su School District up to that maximum allowable under statute.
And your projected deficit this year is how much again for the upcoming year?
To the chair, if there are no increases to the base student allocation, approximately $30 million.
If I may, could I add
just a second? Just when you say increase in the base, you're using the base the BSA or the current dollars in this year's budget? They're two different numbers.
To the chair, in projecting the $30 million deficit, we are using the base student allocation, the 5960, the current base student allocation for our projected enrollment for next school year.
And if this current year is a repeat of last year's addition on top of it, where would your deficit be?
18. To the chair, approximately $18
million. $82
million. $18
million. $18 million, okay, which is less than your $20 million that you're leaving on the table.
To the chair, that's correct.
Okay. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you tell us the relationship between the 71 contributed and the required local? Is it how much more is the 71 than your required local?
Through the chair to Senator Keel, I believe the Mat-Su Borough contributes approximately $27 million above the required local contribution.
Okay. Thank you. We'll go on, I guess, to the next slide, which is your last slide on transportation.
The Mat-Su School District is as many know, a large geographic area. We have some of the longest and most comprehensive transportation system in providing access to education across our vast area. And we have, like the Anchorage School District, experienced a deficit in student transportation over the past 10 years. There are two times when we have not had a deficit for student transportation. The one you can see in 2020 is as a result of a quarters closure where we were not providing transportation. And then last fiscal year, we actually had a surplus for student transportation resulting because of a month-long school bus strike where we were not providing transportation. So certainly not something that we would want to see happen again. Our projected deficit for fiscal year 2025 would be about $5 million. And so we have to take general operating funds and use resources identified for student education to support student transportation to allow the our operations in this area to continue. So it's about a $5 million deficit for fiscal year 2025.
And if you could equate that to a dollar change in the overall system for you to secure that through the formula?
To the chair, I think for the Mat-Su School District, it would be about $315 that would need to increase student transportation on a per-student basis.
Okay. Any other final questions for Mat-Su? It's a growing school district that it's kind of nice to see we have some growth in the state somewhere. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wondering, if you take the maximum allowable account amount into consideration, what is your minimum amount to keep status quo that you would need an increased BSA amount?
Through the chair to Senator Wilson, as we have evaluated our spending for fiscal year 25 and just looking at fiscal year 25, the resource available through Senate Bill 140 do bring us very closely to what we would need. It would be slightly under, but we believe we've got some flexibility with use of fund balance that we would be able to balance fairly easily under those circumstances.
And that's $680 increase?
To the chair, the $680 increase in addition to the additional funds for correspondence, student transportation, and as well as the Alaska Reads Act.
Okay. Any other final questions for Mat-Su before they get off the hook? You have any final comments you want to make brief?
If I may, through the chair, very briefly, on this slide, the maximum allowable. Imagine in your mind that picture we've all seen where the different blind people are touching the elephant, and they describe it differently. So if we think from the borough's perspective, over this time frame, they've gone from giving $60 million to $71 million. They feel like they've been giving more than their share, you know, like they've been committed to the Mat-Su Borough School District. We're the elephant in this picture, and for us, it's been flat. As the borough has given more money, the state has taken away money, and it's part of being in a growing district. This is one of the I don't know, things that you wouldn't expect, I guess. We are in a growing district, but from our perspective as the elephant in this picture, we're flat funded. And that's where I go back to that initial comment where as we've had more students come to the district, we just haven't hired staff as fast as the students have come. And that's the way we're managing this funding situation.
And if you can get back to the committee on your class sizes and with that three-year projection of your school system would be helpful. Kind of the standard questions, so all the school districts answer the same questions. Okay, we'll have a brief. Senator Olson.
Mr. Superintendent, I guess one of the questions I have is you talked about personnel and the hiring thereof. In some of the rural school districts, they've been dependent on going to international reasons to international means to go ahead and try and fill those deficits. Is the Mat-Su School District doing the same thing?
Through the chair, I appreciate that question. We have a team of dedicated professionals that literally work year-round to try to make sure that we have an adequate supply of employees, and they do a phenomenal job. If you look at the first-day vacancy report for Mat-Su, it's one of the lowest around. With that said, there's considerable effort to make that happen, and frankly, we're geographically desirable in the state of Alaska.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman. Okay, thank you. We'll have a brief at ease while we set up the next presenter. We're at ease.
Come back on the record. Now we have from the Cuspuck School District, we have the superintendent, the business manager, if they can introduce themselves for the record and talk about the funding of the Cuspuck School District, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the Senate Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Dr. Madeline Aguilar. I'm the superintendent for the Cuspuck School District, REAA number 5.
Good morning. My name is Martha Morgan. I'm the business manager for the Cuspuck School District, REAA 5.
Okay, so I am going to go off script, off plan, and cut the fluffy stuff and get right to the difficult stuff. We have a little bit of a different story than the first two districts, as we are an REAA. We are a remote school district in Western Alaska. You can see our district lies on the Kuskokwim River, and we are about 320 air miles from Anchorage. And initially, I was hired about 5 years ago from Louisiana as the Director of Special Education and Federal Programs. And then when I became superintendent, I actually brought the Director of Federal Programs position with me to the superintendent's office because, as you'll see from our slides, one of the things that we leverage for our budget is quite a bit of grants. We do a lot of work for competitive grants at the state level and federal level. Currently, right now, our budget, about 67% of our budget is grant funded. However, I'll circle back. You heard from two very large districts. We are a very small district in comparison. But I do want to highlight that we have 9 schools in 7 different communities. We may only have 312 students, but it should be pointed out that last year, 234 students transferred from either within our district or transferred in and out to another district. So we received 234 students that moved within our tiny district. So even though our number says 312 there, and then our count shows 300, there's a lot more students that are coming through our doors. Skip the fluffy stuff. And so who are our students? We're serving a lot of students with a lot of needs. We have approximately more than 97% of our students are Alaskan Native of Yupik and Athabascan descent, 100% free and reduced lunch. And we have 17% of our students receiving special education services, and 4% are intensive. You'll notice on our, let's see, up top, that intensive, the AADM, that intensive number, our intensive students have gone up. And so that's what is raising that percentage while our overall enrollment is going down. So the needs of our students are growing, even though the number of students are going down. Who are our teachers? We have 35 teaching positions, and this is going to be relevant as we talk about our budget development and our projection for the end of this year and our fund balance. But I do want to highlight that our 35 teachers are doing a whole lot of work. So we have right now 6 generalists, and those generalists have up to 6 to 7 different grade levels in one classroom, and they are responsible for up to 42 different courses per semester. That's one person teaching 42 different classes in one semester. We have 3 principals, and we're operating with 2.5 district administrators. And it should be pointed out that those 2.5 district administrators are also managing, writing, evaluating, implementing the 67% of our budget that's built around grants. So we do have 50% of our certified teachers that are on J-1 visas from the Philippines. 3% of our certified staff are Alaskan Native. However, 20% of our certified teaching positions are vacant. 40% of our special education teaching positions are vacant. And we have one school that has no in-person certified teachers. This is the reality of what staffing looks like for us. And you'll see there's a lot of red. We have a projected budget for certified salaries, a little bit over $3 million. Our average teacher salary is $72,000, average administrator salary, $120,000. But yet, we can't keep core educators in our classrooms. We don't have things such as advanced foreign language, music, library. We actually built a school without a library because we know we can't staff it. We can't afford it. So we have an elementary school that's brand new without a library. However, when we're talking about making cuts, we're talking about cutting kindergarten teachers, third grade teachers, core academic teachers. We're not talking about cutting band and fun things. That's the reality. You'll see that while we have all of these red, you might think, okay, that's going to set the district up for a lovely budget. However, we still have to provide those services. You know, we have teachers that are teaching 42 classes a semester, but we have to fill in the gaps in other places when a teacher doesn't come back after Christmas break, or when a teacher has a mental breakdown because they're teaching 42 classes in a semester. So we have had to move a lot of our core instruction to online, and that was unexpected. We didn't expect all these vacancies this year. We were basically 100% staffed when we started, and now it's hit us, and so we've had to do an about-face, and our board has had to make some tough decisions. And so some of our lines, you'll see that's our district budget snapshot from February. And we are over budget, you know, in professional technical, in subs and temps, in contract services. But that's because we're deploying remote learning, online learning. We're hiring teachers from other states to Zoom in with our students. And we're trying to provide the best education possible for our students. And then additionally, the cost of travel. So when we built this budget initially, we had multiple commercial air carriers in our region. And since then, they've pulled out and we're down to one. And so we rely on that one. However, it's caused, you can see that the projection for our staff travel is definitely going to go over 200,000. Our student travel is going to go over 100,000. And that also includes our options to send kids to attend CTE camps and courses that Anchorage offers, that Matsu offers, that Alaska Excel offers. We have to cover those costs, and the costs are going up.
So on that slide, can you help me with the E-rate broadband assistant grant $4 million line, and then the $2.3 million revenue line of the mid-center column, and define what those are?
Yes, to the chair.
So the E-rate is the USAC grant that we get through the federal grant, and we do put that up on revenue, and then it washes down on the expense side.
Okay. What's that? Oh, if you can identify yourself for the record, please.
Martha Morgan.
So they're offsetting, you're offsetting revenue and expenditures here. You got it on the revenue line and the expense line. And then you got FY24, this is the board meeting, FY24. And then the center column is what?
Through the chair. The center column is the expenses, the actual expenses.
Year to date or something? Okay, if you could... And that year to date is February 26th, and I'm not okay. Okay, go ahead, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Aguilar, I guess I was wondering what the success of the Filipino teachers are, as in your what experience you've had in that realm in your district.
Through the chair. Thank you for asking that question, because that's a phenomenal question. This has been a great experience for the district. So we started 4 years ago hiring teachers on J-1 visas, And in the beginning, they taught remotely for us as we worked through and learned the visa process ourselves. And then we were able to start bringing them over. Our retention went from 40%, similar to what we're seeing right now, where we were only retaining 40% of our staff. And then while we had those active visa holders, we hit 90% retention rate. So pretty much everybody that you see, that 50% of certified teachers, those are our initial hires. They are staying. They want to stay the full 3 years. They want to do their extension. It's a cultural exchange visa. It works great. They bring their culture. We share all our culture. They're highly, highly educated teachers, many years of experience. And they're content experts. They completely, our teachers are 100% in support of the READS Act and all of the training the state allows.
Mr. Chairman. Okay. Well, as you look at your scores from the students as they take their, how they're doing in school, what effect has the Filipino, what effect has happened with those scores with the students' achievement rates, essentially?
So through the chair, we are still waiting for test scores for this year, well, for last year. So I can't speak to the statewide testing, but we've been monitoring very closely this year with our MAP testing and our DIBELS testing, our benchmarks. And we have seen great growth in grades K through 3. We have preemptively, we did hire certified preschool teachers as well. But the consistency, and even though the consistency, you know, at a minimum, these individuals can stay for 3 years, that 3 years is a lot more consistent than what we were seeing previously.
Last question, Mr. Chairman. Is that true for your special needs students as well?
So, as also the acting special ed director, because we couldn't hire one, I have two of my current three, so we're down 40%, but two of my special ed teachers are on J-1 visas, and one was just nominated and it received an award from the Governor's Council on the best inclusive practices across the state of Alaska.
Sounds like an uphill struggle. You're doing a good job.
Since you go on to no further questions, slide, sure. We want to touch bases and get to slide 9 here. And Senator Bishop, did you have a quick question?
You're going to slide 9. I'll just, if you don't mind, I'll just go ahead and comment and be quiet. First question, do you have one of these? I've got 9 rural school districts, so I know what you're up against, okay? But is any of these schools in your district reading at grade level in math? Any, like Antioch or Kalskag or Lower Kalskag is?
Through the chair. So we, as an overall grade band, my answer would be no. But when we look at our student data, because number one, our numbers are so small that it's difficult for us to publicize, you know, test scores and such without, you know, risking identifying individual students. But we see a ton of individual growth. We have multiple students that are on gifted and talented plans that are, you know, have been advanced to multiple grade levels. They have completed high school early. They are attending universities across the state. And so our goal is to meet the needs of every individual student. We know we're small, and so that's been my mission, number one. And I do believe that we are trying to leverage our resources to advance to those advanced areas as well.
Just a quick follow-up. We're trying to help you with your deferred maintenance. It's not pretty. I looked at your pictures, and you're not the only one. And I think we were caught up on our deferred maintenance. Our outcomes would be better, too. Thank you.
Okay, so we'll go to the next slide, or the next slide, the next slide. There we go. We're the money committee.
Okay. Okay. So deferred maintenance, yes, that's really, we need to meet our students' basic needs and our teachers' basic needs, because I'll be honest, we have teachers living in our schools too. We don't have housing in some of our communities. So it's not just our students that are spending, you know, 8+ hours a day in these conditions, but it's our teachers that are spending 24 hours a day in these conditions. they're living in them. And we've been requesting, you know, on a couple of these projects between 14 and 15 years for help with these buildings. And as an REAA, we are 100% reliant on the state. I did write an application to Impact Aid for an emergency construction grant, and they granted us partial funding with the clause that the state of Alaska or our local contributions could contribute to finish the project. We can't access that money until we can guarantee that we can finish that project in Sleep Mute, but we don't have the funds to match. It's just not there. Our buildings are completely, they're falling down around our students, and we're trying the best we can, but we're out of physical space. As you can see, that one picture, that's, we're starting to close portions of buildings at this point. And, you know, take away gyms, take away shops, take away restrooms. Yeah.
We have questions, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for your presentation. So just going back to fund balances, saw on the spreadsheet, looks like you hit about $3.2 million at one point in 22. I assume a piece of that is going to be the federal COVID money. And if I remember right, the statewide slide showed you planned to draw about $500,000 from fund balance. I see here projected end of year fund balance closer to 1.2, so that looks like maybe $1 million or $800,000 draw. Can you help us with the added draw from fund balance? And then what's a sustainable approach for your district going forward?
Through the chair. So, yes, thank you for bringing me back to this. I had made my notes, but got off task. And so, yes, we, as you noted in the initial slide, when we built our initial budget, we had a deficit of over $500,000. And so that should also, when you look at this $1.2 million on the projected end-of-year fund balance, taking that away, because we've already committed basically to that because we built our budget that way, and so, and then you've seen all of our overages and at the pace that they're going, you know, and I've been contemplating and we've been thinking, we've been trying to run numbers on would 680, you know, get us across the finish line? Would 500 get us across the finish line? And I can tell you that 680 will maintain what we're doing right now and possibly cutting. Like I said, we'll probably combine, you know, kindergarten, first grade in Antioch, third, fourth grade in Antioch. We'll go to a complete combined model there. Our student numbers in Kalskag and the size of the classrooms do not allow for 30 students in a classroom. The physical space is too small, and the buildings are not in the shape to withstand that. So we cannot physically combine many classes in Kalskag. However, the rest of, you know, Antioch and our upriver schools, they're at bare minimum. And so I would say that 680, we can maintain what we're doing and what you're seeing in these slides.
Okay, thank you. We're going to have to keep moving here because the other guys are going to go on a time diet. So thank you very much. Next up be Kodiak. We'll have a brief at ease while we... Come back on the record. We now have representation from the Kodiak Island School District, which is another school district dealing with
declining enrollment from roughly 2,700 down to about 2,000 this century. So if the superintendent and chief financial officers can introduce themselves for the record and condense your presentation, it would be appreciated.
Mr. Chairman, co-chairs, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. My name is Dr. Cindy Mika, and I'm representing Kodiak School District as the superintendent of schools. And with me, I have our CFO, Sandy Dawes.
Yeah, please speak into the mic. Don't be shy, because this is your moment to make your case for your school.
For the record, Sandy Dawes, Chief Financial Officer.
Okay.
So as you mentioned, our enrollment is declining. We currently have 2,179 students. We have six schools that are in town on the road system, and then we have five rural villages, only one of which is on the road system. We also have a homeschool program that we serve for our district students only with 152 students. So I'm going to switch down. We are 100% staffed. Part of that is with our Filipino teachers. We've switched from J-1 visas to H-1B visas because we want them to have the opportunity to immigrate, and we know that consistency is important in our district. But we are 100% staffed primarily because of our international hires, as well as some of our retention bonuses that we have going on. You can see our enrollment here over the past 20-something years is steadily declining, and this is primarily because of the economics of Kodiak Island. We're primarily a fishing village, and as the a fishing community, and as the our fishing industry has declined, so has our enrollment. Here you see from 2005 to 2025, our enrollment has gone down in our neighborhood schools by about 27%. Our correspondence school has gone up approximately 177%, but that is primarily centered around what occurred during and after the pandemic. Inversely, our intensive needs students have gone up 246%. So overall, our adjusted ADM, while we are having a decline in enrollment, has gone up 18% because of the intensive needs students that we are serving in Kodiak.
So on your declining enrollment, and looking at your chart, it's gone back, well, since the turn of the century, we didn't ask to go back further. So does the school district project that that's going to continue?
Yes, sir, we do. We're very worried about going into next year, in fact, because our largest cannery has announced that they're closing in June. And so that possibly has tied about 150 students whose parents work at the cannery that are currently enrolled in our school system.
Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Mika, I guess I look at your special needs or intensive needs students, and that's gone up. What have you been able to handle that challenge?
It's been very difficult. You know, with the intensive needs also our mental health needs. And so our costs have increased drastically. We're being very innovative in how we're meeting their needs. We do have three of our Filipinos are certified in special education. We also, all of our speech therapists are remote. They do not live on our island. Mm-hmm. And so those services are being provided remotely. So we have an aide sitting in the room, as well as our PT services and some of our OT services are also being provided by providers outside of the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No further questions.
Senator Bishop.
Just a quick one. Have you done any data dive on why the intensive needs went up that much?
Through the chair, we haven't. I haven't done that research.
Senator Wilson.
Yeah, thank you. Just on that same line of questioning, I see every school district has sort of had a change in their intensive needs enrollment. Just so I know if the criteria or testing may have changed or diagnostics have changed, maybe someone can get back to the committee that's listening or in the room later, Mr. Chair.
Right. Okay. Could you go ahead and continue?
Through the chair. You know, we have a lot of extra costs, and I'm
every district does. Our health insurance was self-insured. We've been told it will go up about 20% going into next year, and we just received notice from our Kodiak Electric Corporation that to expect a 12% increase, primarily because the cannery is closing, and costs have to be covered by the community as a result. I know that you had asked about our local support, and so we provided that. Our borough funds us this year in fiscal year 24 at 95%, and with the cannery closing and the impact on the community, our borough has expressed the wish not to raise the mill rate, and so our ask next year will be, even though it will be about $111,000 more, will be about 93% of the maximum allowable. Going into next year, we're expecting a $7.2 million deficit, and so it was necessary for us to cut expenses. We've identified $3.9 million in reductions going into next year as part of our fiscal year 25 budget, and this is staffing, services, and supplies across the board.
So if we can just stop there for a quick, you know, Anchorage has a declining enrollment. They have multiple middle schools, high schools, elementary schools. The city and borough, more along the lines of the city, aggregate road system there at Kodiak Island. How many high schools, middle schools, and elementary schools do you have, and can you close any of them?
We currently have one high school, one middle school, and we have four elementaries. When we've done the analysis right now, we wouldn't be able to close any one. We need to, if we lose a few more students, unfortunately, we will be able to consolidate. And so we have a committee that is beginning in April to look at that beginning in fiscal year 26.
And the reason I ask that, in the smaller communities, they don't have a inventory of schools. It's difficult for school consolidation dealing with your fixed costs.
Correct. Through the chair, the next slide shows our expenses by function. This is after the almost $4 million cuts that we're taking, but we will still have 77% of our funds dedicated to student instruction and about 23% for district operations. And so this is a snapshot of our fund balance in our audit in October. This is our year-end June 30th financials of our fund balance. As you can see, we have about $7 million in unassigned fund balance. Our fiscal year 24 current budget, we dedicated $2.5 million to balance our budget, and that's what was in Mr. Anderson's slide at the very beginning. That's what our red indicated on that slide, was our use of $2.5 million of our fund balance to budget the this year's budget. That leaves us with about $4.7 million unassigned going into next year.
So can you help me on what you're using for a BSA to drive these numbers?
Yes, on the next slide, through the chair, the next slide shows that. So with our $4.7 million, if we have three scenarios there for you in the teal colors on the far right. If we have no BSA and we're flat funded, we're going to have to use an additional $3.5 million of our fund balance, which will only leave us with $1.2 million. If we get a 300 BSA increase, we'll have to use $2.7 million, which will leave us almost $2 million in. 680 gives us the best, right now, the best scenario. We'll have to use $1.1 million, which will leave us with 3.6. But we're looking forward to fiscal year 26. With that 680, we're cutting 3.9 going into fiscal year 25. We will have to cut another $3 million going into fiscal year 26 if we get the 680 in order to stabilize.
So then help the committee. We got about 5 minutes. We got two more slides. So the help the committee with, if the BSA stays flat, as in this year's budget, which is roughly the 300, and runs flat for a couple of years, what do you do to ensure that you don't become illiquid?
We're definitely going to have to close schools, elementary schools. We're going to have to raise our PTR, our ratio in the classroom, and we're going to have to further cut more. It's going to be a dire situation in Kodiak.
So the school you had cut closed would be an elementary school, correct? You're
right.
Not closing a high school.
Can't close a high school or a middle school because we only have one, so we'll have to cut an elementary.
Yeah. And when you finish up here, you got two more slides. One for mention. I'd like you to address the student transportation also, and I think one of the committee members might have another question on hiring or something.
Through the chair, for the student transportation.
For the record, Sandy Dawes, we are in a unique situation with our pupil transportation. We actually are maintaining a fund balance in our pupil transportation fund of about $1 million. We are unable to hire enough bus drivers. Our contractors not able to hire. We would be utilizing all of our funds that are given to us from the state if we were to hire for all of our routes. So we work very closely with our contractor. We consolidate routes. We do very unique things with our buses by just making sure that we're getting all the kids to school on time. However, the bus driver shortage is why we're sitting on a fund balance for pupil transportation.
Okay, we have questions on pupil transportation. Senator Wilson, you have a question. Senator Olson.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I do have, if you're going to be closing an elementary school, is that one of the outlying rural villages that you're going to have to be doing that?
Through the chair, no, sir. We would have to look at our town schools. Okay. Our remote.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No further questions. Just that when you close a school down, you essentially kill the village. So that's a real concern of mine.
Okay. So Kodiak's done good on the clock. So you have three more minutes to tell the committee anything you want to tell them about your finances.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I could
have another question, Senator Olson.
Yeah, if that's okay with you. What I'd like to do is I understand that you've had some special hiring success in getting international teachers. I want you to, could you touch on those efforts that you've done, what you've done, which is different than most other school districts?
Through the chair, what we've done is we have actually traveled to the Philippines. We're not using an agency, and we're doing our own processing through an immigration lawyer. And we've switched wholly to H-1B visas, which are more they like those better because then it's their pathway to immigration, and then we have a stability in our workforce. So for the past 2 years, we've traveled to the Philippines, and we have conducted our own job fairs there. This year, we went to both Manila and Cebu City. We went to Cebu because it's rural, remote, and we knew that those are the types of teachers that would be better integrated into our community, especially our rural sites. And so we screened about 243 candidates. 50% of those met our standards that can be further interviewed when we have openings. We specifically went because we have a special education shortage, teacher shortage, and that, so that's why we primarily went. We also invited another district to go with us this year. And any of the teachers that we screened that met our standard for English language and pedagogy, we've shared that information with the ATP teacher application system so that other districts can benefit from our efforts of going to the Philippines to meet the teachers personally.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you tell me what the requirements are for your retention bonuses, please?
Yes, and so for our, all of our staff get a retention bonus. Our certified staff get it in June when they've signed their contract, and it was $2,500 this year. Our classified staff get it on their first paycheck in September if they come back to the position because they're not on contract.
Thank you.
Senator Wilson, final question for Kodiak.
Thank you. Do you find that retention bonuses are successful? How long you've been doing them, and just would you continue to do them if funding was there and available?
Through the chair, Sandy Dawes.
For the record, the contract started in 24, and I feel that they have been very successful. It's the first time that we've actually tried them with our classified staff, which is, you know, they're not under contract, so they're a little harder to gauge whether they're going to stay with you or not. But that was an agreement that we had came to in lieu of a raise because we couldn't afford to give them a large raise. And so far, I feel that that has been successful and well received from our classified staff as well as our teachers.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for coming today. And we are definitely concerned about the closing of canneries up and down the coast and the impact. So I'm sure we'll be working on that the next couple of years. Next up is going to be the Northwest Arctic Borough School District. We'll have a quick recess while we set up for them. We're at recess. Well, not recess, we're at ease. Come back on the record, please. Up now is Northwest Arctic Borough School District. And their enrollment is bought sideways relative to the ones that are advancing and declining this century. So they're here to talk a little bit about that. If you can condense your presentation and take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and co-chair members of the Finance Committee. I really appreciate this time to be able to talk about our school district. For the record, my name is Terry Walker, superintendent.
For the record, my name is Megan Williams, Director of Administrative Services.
We presented some highlights, but we'll keep going. So as you can see, over the last 10 years, our enrollment was in FY14 about 1880, and although it's fluctuated up and down, it's now about 1880 also. So we've pretty much maintained. And this slide talks about how we build our schedule. In FY23, we had a budget deficit of $1.5 million. In FY24, that deficit increased to $8.2 million. And you can see below how we balanced the budget last year with that $8.2 million. And now this year, FY25, we're at a $14 million deficit. Beginning of the year fund balance for FY24 was $9.9 million, and projected end-of-year fund balance will be $3.5. This is a slide of our budget expenditures by function. So preliminary FY25 beginning of the year fund balance, $3.5 million, and projected end-of-year fund balance, a deficit of $14 million.
Can you help the committee with what numbers you're using for the BSA in your projections?
We are using the 5960 that we currently get. We don't count on, we don't put any money in here that we haven't received.
All right, so the base.
The base student, yes.
Yes, the very base of the base.
The very basic, yes. If if we were to the chair, if we were to receive the increase of 680, that would add $5.1 million to our budget. Then we will still look at needing to find $9 million. Okay. Wait, yeah. Here are some of the reasons for our $14 million deficit: increased salaries, decrease in impact aid, increased health insurance, transfers out. This is our capital improvement projects over the last few years. Like in FY22, we had a 3.6 fund balance in our capital improvements. We're down to $1.7 million. I want to say that with that 1.7, we've got several villages that have fire panels that are outdated now, and one of them has quit working, and our board has prioritized that fire panel to for the safety of our students and staff, that we have to fund that, and it's going to cost $750,000 to get that funded. So we're going to use that 1.7, we're going to fund that. Another community doesn't have a backup generator. Every year, the communities up there, see, we're spread out over 39,000 square miles with 11 villages. And every year, the cities in one of those villages, the city's light fire generator will go out, and the safest place for the community to go, because all of our villages have backup generators at our schools. So they have the elders and the children come up to the school to stay warm while they fix their city generator. Our schools have been determined to be the safe place for our communities in any kind of hazard that goes on, flooding, whatever goes on. They go up to the school. And so one of our schools doesn't have a backup generator. And so we prioritize that also. Although that says 200,000, we're looking at more like 350,000. It's been determined. So that 1.7 is going to be used for those types of emergencies. Right now, like last year, this year, the NOAATAC pump house, it went out and the tank cracked. And so all of the fluids in there was spreading out all over the ground. And that was a $345,000 fix. So this is why our fund balance for our capital projects have been depleting. We keep having to use it for emergencies. That's the point I wanted to make. There are six-year capital improvement needs. We need $89.6 million to get all this fixed. Our teacher recruitment efforts, we started out the year with 40 teachers short in our schools. We have currently 40 foreign teachers, teachers mostly from the Philippines. We have hired an additional 20 for next year, so we'll have about 60, which is, 44%, I think, of our teaching staff will be teachers from the Philippines. 17 of those 40 came at break because, we had a lot of vacancies in our classrooms, and so we felt like most of those vacancies in our classroom teachers finally got filled at the in January, and we felt like we could finally continue and actually get started, with the READS Act and building kids' skills. And, although a teacher was teaching fourth grade, they had to make lesson plans for the second, third, first grade, because we had substitutes in those classrooms. So it was really difficult and a hard first semester. And we don't want to go there again, starting out with 40 less teachers in our classroom. So we went ahead and hired 20 more teachers from the Philippines. So hopefully we'll start out with a full classroom this next year. You can see it below. Our transportation is only in Kivalina. Our Kivalina school was built 8 miles out of the community. So we have to have a bus go in. Takes 20 minutes to get there and about an hour round trip for a bus. And so the district receives $27 per ADM, and we would need $106 per ADM to fully fund that student transportation for Kivalina.
Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How does the salary that you pay Filipino teachers compare to what they could make at home?
Through the chair, Senator Merrick, I was told that the teachers in the Philippines, their salaries are not that much. And so when they come here, they have a large increase to the salaries. I would say at least a tenth, but I would have to get that information back to you.
That would be wonderful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When these teachers from overseas come over, do they bring their children with them?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, yes, we are seeing these teachers bring their children, which has increased our enrollment.
And who pays for it?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the teachers pay for their children. However, the district has had to pay for the teachers, and it's about $20,000 per teacher.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we've got about 3 minutes left.
The next slide shows what happens if funding is flat. There's no way we'd be able to close schools because, you know, each village is its own, and we close the school, then that closes the school for the whole community. Our schools are pre-K through 12th grade. We're 100%, we're a Title I school district with over 80% that qualify for meals. Our meals, our students, we subsidize $1.2 million above and beyond what the USDA reimburses and to feed our students.
Okay. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to touch on some, we've all seen some horrific slides from other school districts related to deferred maintenance. Can you tell me what's going on with deferred maintenance within the Northwest Arctic School District?
Well, in the past, we've always had a fund balance to move over to deferred maintenance to help fix some of our communities. However, we've been saving that little bit to try to, you know, to do the emergencies. But, you know, we've got a school right now that in that 20 below west winds, the classroom can't get more than 50 degrees. So the kids have to move into the gym to hold classes because the classrooms are on the west side. The wind just seeps right through. You know, of course, several of our schools have outdated heating controls, outdated fire panels, and our teacher housing. Got to watch where you walk because your foot's going to fall through the floor if you step, you know, in a certain area. In our schools, the floors are stapled down, you know, so we can keep the tiles on there. I can go on and on and on and on.
Last question, Mr. Chair.
Yes, last question.
When you're dealing with special needs students out in the villages, especially you're living in Kotzebue, you got all the expenses of going out there to Kobuk or up to places that are a long ways away. How do you deal with the kids that are really have some significant deficits and disabilities?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, we source out our, for PT and OT and all of those specialists that serve our students. They have to travel to the villages like once or twice a year, but it's through Teams or some audio video conferencing, you know, with, but we make sure we prioritize our funds to serve our special needs population. They're very important to us. They're very important to the community. So.
Okay. Thank you. Next up is going to be Ketchikan. And the final one, we'll have a brief at ease. We'll catch you and get set up. We're at ease. Back on the record here, we're down to the final presenter, and he's going to get a two-minute haircut. So we have with us Mr. Robbins, Superintendent of Ketchikan School District. If he could strip down his presentation to the issues at hand today would be helpful, and we will end at 11 o'clock.
Okay, we start here. Thank you, Senator. We start here in Ketchikan with no fund balance. We actually had a negative fund balance last year. So I think that we are where some of the school districts that just presented will be in the next fiscal year or in the following fiscal years without an increase in the base student allocation. Although we saw a declining enrollment over the past decade in Ketchikan, the base student allocation did not increase, we had to cut over 12% of our employees last year, which was over 50 employees, and that included district office, maintenance teachers, paraeducators, administrative assistants, and technology. So there were cuts across the board. We are staring at a 14% increase in health insurance, which is about $1.1 million on the $8.9 million that we pay currently. We are looking at preventative maintenance and not being able to do it. Technology increases, special education costs, increased class sizes, and the inability to maintain our academic program, which we feel has been successful over the past 3 years. And so that looks like cutting pre-K, and that definitely impacts our Alaska Native students. If our Alaska Native students are enrolled in a pre-K program, they'd have over a 90% chance of graduation. If they're not enrolled in the pre-K program, that drops to below 60%. So keeping pre-K is an incredibly important part of what we're trying to do in Ketchikan. This year's budget allocation, we're going to ask our borough to fund to the cap because of an increase in special education staffing and federal requirements for individual education programs. Maintenance expenditures have increased. Shipping costs increase and energy costs increase. 89% of our budget are personnel and fixed costs. So when we have to cut, like we did last year, we have to cut our staffing at all levels. And then our expenditures next year are really based on our healthcare and the impact of the healthcare that we'll have. We're looking at 4.5% to 6% increase in expenditures, which would be in line with the inflationary costs that exist.
Yes. Do you, before we get into Senator Wilson's question, do you put in your budget unfunded positions like Anchorage, or how do you handle that?
Through the chair, we do not put in unfunded positions. So when we budgeted this year, we used a $100 BSA increase, and we tried to make our staffing levels were exactly where we needed them. One of the reasons why we're going to our borough to increase the allocation through them is because we had an expansion of students who needed special education services. In order to stay in compliance with the federal regulations, we then had to add those positions. But when we budgeted, we tried to budget the positions that we needed and not put any more positions than we already had.
And that $100 addition to the BSA, what BSA number are you using?
For next year, we would need to have $680.
No.
What
BSA number are you using that you are going to add $100 to?
Oh, the $340.
$340.
Okay. We budgeted $100. There's $240 left in the BSA in the cap, and so we're going to ask to get funded to the cap from our borough.
Okay, so that would be an additional $100 over the current year's funding.
Correct.
Okay. We have the base BSA for those watching at home, that's in statute, and then we have the additional funding outside the statutory formula that has to flow through the formula for those watching at home. So we need to be clear on what our base BSA number we're talking about. The statutory number, the current year's budget number, or some other number. We have Senator Olson, then Senator Keel, do you have a question? Okay, Senator Olson. Wilson. I knew it was on this side somewhere. Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just quickly here, so you said you're asking for the full amount. What's the current amount? Do they fund the cap for last year and the previous years, or what's the delta in between the cap and what you're funded at?
Good question. Through the chair, last year we were funded to the cap for the first time in about 20 years. And then this year there's a gap of about $1.7 million.
Okay, thank you.
And on that as a follow-up, could you tell us about the fund balance carryover? Is there a different cap on that also?
Sure. Yes.
From the local level?
Yes, through the chair. You can have fund balance that you don't have to assign unassigned fund balance. We don't have any unassigned fund balance at this particular time. We have transportation fund balance, which is starting to lower, and then there's some food service fund balance that we have. But the unassigned is where we don't have any maneuverability. We don't have any, like, we're literally hand to mouth when it comes to what we're doing in our school district. And a $49 million budget is one of the largest employers in the Southeast. It's very difficult to run a school district without any fund balance at all. And that's where we're at right now.
Okay. And then to your earlier comments, you already have done the reductions in your staffing levels?
Yes, sir. We through the chair, we reduced over 50 positions, like I said, which is about 12% of our employee number. Our reduction in students was only around 3-4%. So you can see we went over and above what we would have to in order to make sure that we met the balanced budget requirements that we have to have.
All right. And then Ketchikan's down about 20% in headcount this century.
Yes, sir.
And Sitka and Petersburg are 30, roughly. Just to give you an idea, we had to pick a community out of the region, and we picked Ketchikan because they've already done the reductions. Rather painful, I'm sure, was the process.
Yes, through the chair, yes, it was.
And then talk to the committee about if you were to close schools, how many high schools do you have? How many junior highs or middle schools? How many elementary schools? What flexibility do you have there if there's a continual erosion in the headcount?
We have one comprehensive high school, Ketchikan High School. Then we have a alternative school in Revilla. We have one middle school. We have three elementary schools. And then we have two charter schools in our school district. So closing a school would be difficult with the way the numbers are and where they're at. What we might have to do is have a school that's a pre-K-3 and then a 4-6 in order to consolidate those classes. If we don't do that, then our class sizes would be much larger than they are currently right now. So that would be 27, 28 to 1 if we didn't go the consolidation route as far as having an elementary center, an intermediate center, if we didn't get a BSA increase.
So when the different districts here get back to the committee, I'd like to also add, when we look forward 3-4 years, I think 3 years what we're talking about, what they expect or if they have any planned labor contract agreements within that time range, which would, you know, increase obviously the overhead.
Through the chair, when we look at our budget for next school year, the things that we're adding into the budget aren't anything that is outside of our academic program. We're looking at contract step extensions, the increase of about $1.1 million in healthcare maintenance budget or preventative maintenance budget, and then technology budgets that we need because obviously our students need to use computers and those aren't going away. That's at a minimum. We're not asking for any more staffing. I think that we're right-sized where we're at. But if we don't get a BSA increase, then we're going to have to eliminate one of those things, some of those things, or increase class sizes.
So if you're looking at a $100 increase, if your status quo, the 380, I think we added last year, whatever it was, 340.
340.
Yeah, 340. Where would that put the district?
At 340, we would be about $1.8 million short, $1.9 million short.
And how would you cash flow that if you have zero fund balance?
That's where we would have to look at other programmatic cuts, cut in maintenance budget, cut in staffing, increased class sizes, programmatic cuts, preschool, music, PE, art, those things that are not part of the core. But those are the things that keep kids in school, right? Like our music program has 100 kids in it. And a lot of reasons why kids go to school is because of music. And it's without those programs or career and technical education, for example. Those are the things that we need in Southeast Alaska. Those are the things that get people, our students, jobs when they leave school. And so we don't want to change our academic program because we don't want our kids to lose connection with school because we took their favorite program because we couldn't afford it based on a BSA increase.
Okay. We got a couple more minutes before he gets out of the hot chair. Do we have any other questions for Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Robbins, I guess one of the questions I have for you is we've talked about, and one of the big contentious issues right now has to do with teacher retention. Does Ketchikan Gateway Borough have a teacher retention program that's out there?
I think that we have a teacher retention program for teachers who are in their first 4 to 5 years. We have a lot of teachers who are veteran teachers who've been with us for a long period of time. But keeping the teachers who are going to replace those veteran teachers mm-hmm. as they retire sure. is almost impossible because of the retirement system that we have and the inability to have a defined benefit at the end of it. They're taking that after 3-5 years and they're leaving. They're migrating down to the lower 48. So because we're so close to the lower 48, it's much easier for our teachers to say, well, I'm going to be here for 4 or 5 years and then I'm going to move and find a defined benefit. I lost one of my best directors. My director of student supports, who directs all of our social workers in our schools to the lower 48 this year, simply based on retirement and the system that we have. And so I think it definitely impacts keeping talent in our district, both at the district office and director level, but also replacing veteran teachers with teachers who are just starting out their career. And they used to make a career out of being in Ketchikan. I mean, it's the best place in Alaska to live, obviously. And so they want to stay there. And so we want to make sure we keep that because keeping veteran teachers is what keeps kids connected to school.
So it's not salaries?
I think our salary scale is probably pretty close to where it is in Washington and starting salary. Once again, though, Ketchikan's a little bit different than the rest of the state. When I was in Tuxuk Bay, we had to have a much higher salary schedule based on standard of living and cost of living and moving. But I would also say with an increase of base student allocation, teacher salaries can increase, and also paraeducators can increase. The one thing that we have a very difficult time in finding is paraeducators and then paying them the appropriate amount of money that they would need in order to make a living. And sometimes they have to take other jobs, and we have a tourism industry. And so we'll lose paraeducators in April, and then they won't come back to us until the middle of September when the tourism industry drops.
And housing, you have no problems with housing?
We have tremendous amounts of problems with housing. It's an incredibly difficult situation. We do not have teacher housing like they do up north, and so they have to continually find teacher housing. And for some young families, that's incredibly difficult to do.
Okay. Last question, Mr. Chairman.
Last question. Mr. Olson.
You've heard about the governor's proposal for a teacher retention bonus that's out there has been very contentious. In fact, we've passed it, one of the bills without that in it, and there's kind of been an ultimatum. Do you care to comment on what that proposal that's coming from the third floor is going to do to your district compared to what you have already as far as retention of teachers? Because it sounds like you're pretty successful.
Through the chair, I think that if we're going to have a retention bonus for people, I think we need to have a retention bonus for everybody that impacts students in school. And that includes paraeducators, that includes administrators, that includes people that – there are a lot of reasons why kids come to school.
Sure.
And it's a caring adult that makes some kids come to school a lot of times. And the caring adult can be the cook, they can be the custodian, they can be anybody in that school that makes a connection with that student. And so if we're going to offer retention bonuses, why aren't we offering retention bonuses? Everybody is an educator at a school. As soon as you walk into a school, you are an educator. You are teaching students something. And so when we look at the broad spectrum of why kids come to school and why they connect to school, that is because they have caring adults, and we should reward all of those caring adults because everybody can make a difference in school.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. That concludes our presentations from the school districts. I wish there was an endless stream of revenue here at the table to allocate around, but clearly there's not. So we have some work to do here over the next 2 months. So we'll look forward to the districts getting back to us on some of those questions, and we'll work through the process the next couple of months dealing with the school funding. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, March 6th at 9 a.m. That's tomorrow, 9 a.m. We'll have two bills up. Senator Olson will chair. Senate Bill 197, which is a residential building code, and Senate Bill 183, Workers' Compensation Benefit Guarantee Fund. So that concludes this morning, and I would like to have a special thanks for the school folks coming to Juneau to help us directly at the table have a dialogue on this very important matter before the state. We are adjourned at 11:03.